This is Dan Ray, the host of Nightside. I hope you enjoy listening to the Nightside podcasts here at the Nightside website, and I invite you to join us every Monday through Friday night from 8 to midnight for Nightside on WBZ News Radio 1030. I'm delighted to welcome to the program Dr. Diane Roberts Stoller, but she goes by the simple name Dr. Diane. That makes it pretty simple. So Dr. Stoller, I'll call you Dr. Stoller a couple of times so people know that you really do have a last name, but it is Dr. Diane.
And even my website is drdiane.com.
Okay, so that makes it really simple. I'm surprised that you're ready. There aren't more than one Dr. Diane website. You must have got it early.
That's right.
Okay. Your book, Coping with Concussion and Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, A Guide to Living with the Challenges Associated with Post-Concussion Syndrome and Brain Trauma. It's a lot to cover. Let's just qualify you, and I think you're very well qualified. You're a neuropsychologist. You're a sports psychologist. You're also someone who suffered a brain injury yourself, so you know of what you speak.
That's right.
Let's talk about, define for me and for my audience, what does a neuropsychologist do?
A neuropsychologist specializes in brain health, so it's understanding the physiology of the brain, how it's functioning, and how to helps you look at the symptoms and causes, and that's the main areas.
So you actually sit with someone who
has had a concussion. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
And you help them.
Or stroke.
And you help them reverse.
That's right.
The impact.
We look at the symptoms of a concussion, and I'll be going over some of those symptoms, and then where it is in the brain, where it's causing. It's a little bit like when you think of symptoms, you know, you have like a runny nose. But that runny nose can be from a virus. It could be from a bacteria. It can, you know, so or an allergy right now with all the allergies. So you're looking at the symptom of maybe confusion or why. But where in the brain is it specifically? And then we can help.
So do you locate the problem through MRIs?
You
and
can do
things like that?
Most of the patients come in. We'll talk about the
CAT
different
scans.
CAT scans are not as good as an MRI, but the specifically, especially if someone's been in a accident where there's litigation, you want to have an SWI, which is a single weighted imagery. And what that is, it's very more detailed. You can see if there's, you know, arteries or veins been, you know, leakage versus the other one. It's more specified, yes.
Okay. You also are a sports psychologist.
Yes.
And that's a little different. I do know that there are people like you who work with elite athletes or professional athletes and try to improve their performance.
And I do that.
Okay. Without identifying the athletes, what are some of the organizations, amateur or professional, that you've been working
with? I've worked with, I joke about, if you came into my office, I have a custom-made couch. It's 7 foot long for my NBA players. Mm-hmm. You move the pillows, and that's for my NFL players. And then I have cushions for my gymnasts because they're all very tiny.
Okay.
And so I've worked with the Olympic athletes, and I've worked with
Now, these are folks who do not have a physical brain injury per se.
No, but
okay.
some who do.
Okay, but primarily when you talk about sports psychology, you're talking about someone who is underperforming or thinks they can be a better.
That's right.
A professional fill in the blank.
So my practice goes into both brain rehabilitation, fixing it, and brain fitness. So for example, someone wants to be more focused and get that cutting edge. We can do that.
A lot of the pro athletes who I've talked to over time and I've read about talk about imaging. In their own mind, having an image of success, whatever they do. If they're a basketball player shooting that shot,
that's nothing but net.
You become the
ball.
Okay.
And we go into those frequencies, and that's part of one of the things we work. So through hypnosis, we do that, neurofeedback, absolutely.
So you are involved with hypnosis?
Absolutely. I've been published in the field.
Really? So you do a lot. Let's take it back for a moment to your own experience. You had a brain injury yourself.
Yes, I did. I had a cerebral bleed, which is a form of a stroke, while driving. I had a 60-mile-an-hour head-on auto accident and injured my optic nerve, my jaw, 4 cervical, 4, 3 thoracic, 3 lumbar, both my knees. And Then 5 months later, I had brain surgery, and I had a portion of my brain removed. And by 1994, I was told by every single doctor in Boston, every neurologist, that I was permanently brain damaged. I would never walk, talk ever again. And I, at the time, I had an integrative team. And I then took, I said, Doc, you're going to have to heal yourself. And I figured out how to do it. And after I did, I wrote the first book, Coping with Mild Traumatic Brain Injury. And so... And
then, so you had a stroke while driving?
Yes, I did. I had a cerebral bleed. Yeah, an aneurysm, a bleed.
If this is 1994, you're talking nearly a quarter century ago.
That's right.
So you were a very young woman.
And at that time, there was not MRIs that we talked
sure,
about.
Sure, right.
There was the only CAT scans. And yes, I was a young woman. I had three little kids at the time. I had a 7-year-old and 2 10-year-olds. And I had a very large practice. I had 3 offices, over 256 patients, and I lost everything. Took me 7 years to regain and my life again and start all over.
Probably to regain your ability to walk.
And walk and talk, yeah.
Now, the thing that is interesting about that is that I know that all of us are worried about, for example, cardiac health. And you go and you get your blood pressure checked, and you make sure that you sit with your doctor every year. And we cardiac health is very important. But brain bleeds,
right.
There's not much that can be done to anticipate or diminish the chances of those, as
absolutely.
I understand it.
You're right.
And that's what scares me.
Right.
More than anything.
And what do you know, one of the things I said, you know, when you go
brain
in.
Brain bleeds or aneurysms.
But, you know, think about it. When you go in and they take your heart and they don't do a brain scan, why not? Why don't they get a baseline?
And would that, should that be done, in your opinion?
In my opinion, yes. Absolutely.
So a brain scan.
Just like you have your yearly EEG.
EKGs, whatever, sure.
EKGs, sure. You have EKGs, and sometimes they even give you, if they think there's some seizures, maybe an EEG.
Yeah.
But I'm saying you can do a brain map, yes, and to see that.
Okay. Now, when we get back, I want to talk about concussions, and I want to talk about particularly concussions in young people, kids who are playing and participating in youth sports. We've heard a lot about it. I think all of you at this point understand that Dr. Diane, having been a victim of trauma herself, has been able to heal herself, as they say, heal thyself, doctor. And now she is using those lessons to help others. Her book, Coping with Concussion and Mild Traumatic Brain Injury, I'm going to try to draw a distinction between concussion and mild traumatic brain injury so we understand the difference in the terminology. And if you have questions about any question dealing with brain injury or concussions, I would suggest you get on early. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. Coming right back on Nightside.
Danny, what is it?
Dan Ray.
Do you guys mind keeping it down? We're trying to have a conversation here.
Danny, what's going on?
Nightside.
Beezy Nightside. Beezy Nightside. Every single one of us got Beezy Nightside.
WBZ. News Radio 1030.
My guest in studio is Dr. Diane. Her full name is Dr. Diane Robert Stoller, but we're going to call her Dr. Diane. Her website's pretty simple, drdiane.com.
Right.
Right? Okay.
That's right.
And we're talking about concussions. And if any of you have kids out there who are participating in youth sports, hey, concussions are a possibility. There's all sorts of injuries. But when you talk about a kid spraining an ankle or twisting a knee, who knows, maybe even breaking a wrist or something. That's important stuff. When you talk about brain injury, that really is a concern. So let's talk about young kids. And when I say young kids, I'm talking about kids under 12.
Okay.
Are there some sports where concussions are less likely to occur?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, in, when we're talking about less likely, obviously water sports and roller skating.
Well, a lot of people fall down from roller skating, right?
But it's not the same as when you're doing, you know, football, you know, and peewee football, you know, when we're dealing with boxing, you know, some of the karate work. Those are more, or even the cheerleading, they have more chances of getting concussion with cheerleading.
Yeah, I noticed you have a list here on page 30 of leading sports and recreational pursuits that can cause concussions.
Right.
Cycling.
Yes.
That's just bicycling, right?
Yes, number one.
Number one.
Number one.
And is that because people don't wear helmets?
That's right.
Okay. Then you got boxing. I get that. Football, I get that. Wrestling, I get that. Then you got baseball and softball. So I assume what you're there is talking about you get hit by a line drive.
That's right.
Huh, okay. Basketball, a lot of contact with basketball.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have a patient right now who got a concussion through who's playing basketball.
Okay. Yeah. And then I always felt that ice hockey was a lot safer than people realize, because ice hockey is listed as 17.
That's right.
Fewer knee injuries in ice hockey.
Right.
My kids, both my kids participate in ice hockey. A lot more knee injuries in places like soccer as opposed to ice hockey. Yeah. But
right.
Ice hockey for concussions is down below golf. The list here is you have more concussions for golf than ice hockey.
Yeah, you could get hit in the head with a nice ball.
No, but what is this based on? Is this based upon
statistics? Yeah, yeah? The research that has been out.
Really? So tell us, and then rugby and lacrosse are down below golf, tennis, and racquetball.
Right, because one of the things that we'll be talking about is the difference between a head injury and a brain injury. And that, you know, your brain, your head, you have your hair, your scalp, and then you have a protection around your brain, which is your gray matter. It has fluid around it, right? And when you think about it, if I hit your head and you hit my head, we're going to hurt. But is if you're sitting there and a ball just comes and hits you at a velocity, you might not even get a head injury, but you can get a brain injury. So if you're sitting in a car and you get rear-ended, you can get a brain injury without a head injury.
Okay. I want to start to work some callers in here. But before we do that, what should parents be thinking about? The kid plays in a game and somehow they're playing soccer and, the ball gets hit off their head, or they hit their head on the ice. They're wearing a helmet, but they hit their head on the ice, or whatever. Or they have a collision in the outfield, both going for fly ball. And you're concerned as a parent. And what will your child talk about that night? You're not concerned enough to take him or her to the hospital. But so what can you do as that first diagnosis?
Oh, so in that situation, which I call the ding, okay, is that if they're getting, the child has not been confused before and they're coming in and saying, or they're more irritable than they used to be. And in my book, I have a whole list, and also my website, of all the symptoms of a concussion, the emotional, the behavioral.
Give us the most common.
The most common is the headache that everybody talks, the nausea, sleep disturbances. Those are right up there. Feeling pressure in the head, feeling disorientation, where they can't think correctly. The reading is having difficulty. My own niece just recently got one, and her first symptom, which was she started getting nauseous and throwing up. Mm. And so it's the headaches, the sleep disturbances, the fatigue. They just feel tired all the time.
Now, you'll see trainers at sporting events when there's a head injury, and they'll be asking the player to focus on a finger. What's going on there?
They're trying to see if they are this disorientation, to see if this distracting. Because one of the things, when you get that frontal lobe knocked off, that ability to think and emotions and planning gets all off kilter. Yeah.
Okay. And if there's any doubt, I assume if you're a parent, go to take the kid to an emergency room that night and get them evaluated.
Absolutely.
Any doubt at all.
That's right.
Any doubt at all. And what...
If it's been, this is one of the things we were talking about before, if it's in a auto accident or, it's in a situation where there's any doubt, then to get more than a CAT scan. That's, get an MRI. And if you can get the DTI, which most people never heard of, that's the white matter. That's the electrical system. And you want to see if there's any tears or shears in that.
All right, let's get some phone calls here. Let's go to Dave in Gloucester. Dave, welcome. You are first this hour with Dr. Diane. We're talking about concussions. Go ahead, David.
Hello, Dr. Diane. And I had a couple of concussions back in 1970 and 1971 playing football, high school football. First time it happened, I was on special teams. I got knocked out during a kickoff, and I continued to play defense for a couple of rounds, and then I ended up back on the bench before I woke up. I didn't know what had hit me. I was out of the game for the rest of the game. The following year, I collapsed on the field. They had to scrape me off the field and take me back. I don't think I've experienced any long-term problems from it, but with all the current concern, I'm wondering if there's something that you would recommend should be done in a situation like that to just make sure? Does it lead to Alzheimer's? Or is there something that...
So you're really asking, is there something waiting down the road because you had a couple of serious concussions as a teenager, right?
Right.
All right. Does Dave have a higher likelihood of any neurological problem down the road?
Absolutely, positively, yes.
That's not the answer I wanted to hear for you, Dave. I was hoping she was going to say absolutely, positively, no.
So, Dave, I'm going to tell you some things that I tell every one of my patients who come in the first round and when I do my consults with them, is that if you need to take a medication that affects your central nervous system, you want to really think about it because your brain has been injured. And that is something that medication can cause you to have. You know, so if you have, some steroids, one of the things that...
Can cause him to have what?
More confusion, and it could cause that injury to be more affecting.
But we're talking about a guy that had concussions in the 1970s,
right.
Which is now, it's 45 years later.
Right.
Right.
That's right.
And how old are you now, Dave? I'm assuming you're 65 or 63.
63.
Yeah, okay, because you're a high school football player. So now he's 63, and he's thinking, does this increase his chances for things like dementia and things like that?
The answer is we'll take anesthesia, Dave. Okay? For the normal puppy, for the average person taking any general anesthesia, there's a cognitive impairment from maybe a day to 6 weeks. You've now had a concussion. The chances of having more impairment because of that weakness, of having that concussion, you may have more long-term cognitive impairment because of it, yes.
So that would be dementia?
Yes, a form of dementia, yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Dave.
So what I say to you, if it's life or death, like I recently, because I've had more, since we've talked about it, I have had two more concussions. And when I fell and had a massive tear on my rotator cuff, and they said, well, you need to have surgery. I said, no, it's not worth it. There's other ways of handling it because the anesthesia can directly affect.
The anesthesia can directly affect what?
Your cognitive ability.
Okay, is the potential for the impact on your cognitive ability from anesthesia increased because you previously had a concussion?
That's right.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, Dave was trying to ask a question, so I don't want to lose him. Dave, you had another question.
Yeah, I got a beaut. I have cancer.
So do I.
And esophageal cancer. I was diagnosed in 2008. I have been through, I can't count how many endoscopies. I've had a thoracotomy. I've had laparoscopic esophagectomy. Every time that happens, I get an anesthesia.
Yes.
I'm the anesthesia boy.
So you know what I'm talking about then, Dave?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I'm losing cognitive ability, but I guess if the concussions make the use of anesthesia more of a risk and might lead to greater loss in cognitive ability, then I think I'm probably a perfect candidate.
Okay, wait a second. I want to make sure that I'm understanding what the two of you are saying, because I think there's a lot of people out there who might be a little confused. So Dave has a couple of concussions when he's in his teens. Now it's 45 years later, and he's dealing with some more serious medical issues, in which anesthesia needs to be involved. Correct, Dave?
Correct.
Okay. So
at least once every year or two.
Okay. So the point of the question is, by submitting to the more serious procedure, which includes anesthesia, and his cognitive abilities will be diminished for a period of, you said, of some period of time.
Yeah.
After that period of time, do those cognitive abilities return to where they were before the anesthesia? Or is this every time he has anesthesia, there's a further diminution, long-term diminution of his cognitive abilities?
There's two points to this. One, it can be. This is what you're always taking this risk. Is this procedure worth maybe some of the cognitive impairment?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
The other is knowing that through neurofeedback, that can be reversed, and that's what helps bring back the brain because of neuroplasticity, that if this happens, you can, through neurofeedback, which I do, it can reverse it. And Dave, just to let you know, is it David or Dave?
Dave. What difference? It's Dave.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. I just
either
want,
or.
Okay. Thank you.
Call me late to dinner.
Okay. Is that I also have cancer. I have one of the rarest forms of lymphoma, and they wanted to do chemo, and I refused. This is on my website. You can read about it on drdiane.com. And the reason why is because of chemo brain, and that part of that is causes in cognitive impairment. So is that you're making a choice, a very clear choice, is the benefit of the anesthesia, is the benefit of the chemo outweigh that you may have some cognitive impairment. But even if you have the cognitive impairment, which it can be form of dementia, this is what's called dementia, is that through neurofeedback, you can reverse that. So I'm letting you know that.
Okay, Dave, I hope that answers and clarifies some of your questions, okay?
It does. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Have a great night.
Take care.
Got to take a quick break. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. As you can see, this is perhaps a little bit more complicated than all of us might think. And you say, well, my son or my daughter had a concussion playing high school this or high school that. There could be long-term implications. Of course, the next question that we will be talking with Dr. Diane about is, does that mean you should, because of the potential risk, keep your kids out of contact sports? And again, if you've had a question or you'd like to share an experience, 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. Coming right back on Nightside.
Get one of these radios.
Hi, Danny.
I am trying to talk to you.
Oh, I want to talk with somebody.
Nightside with Dan Ray.
With somebody you'll be.
WBZ News Radio 1030.
All right, let's get another caller in. Larry and Quincy. Larry, you are next on Nightside. Go right ahead.
Hi, how you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great.
You have the lady there, the doctor, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, last March, I suffered a concussion. I had an injury to the front of my head. For the last year, they've had me, like, on therapy. They tried this and that. And nothing is working. They're at the point now where... if she's listening,
she's absolutely a, Larry. She's sitting right here. She's listening. How old are you, Larry? How old are you?
I'm 62.
62. And the concussion that you had, you just fell down, or what? What caused the concussion?
Something hit me in the head. 360-pound door frame hit me.
That'll do it.
The right front. It punched a hole right through my head.
It punched a hole into your skull.
Yeah, like a can opener, like, you know, like a small can opener. It would picture a can opener indentation, you know, right through the bone and into the...
So your brain was directly impacted.
Yeah, and I was unconscious for several hours.
No kidding.
I was in
the
hospital for 13 days. I had to go 6 weeks to the Care One Center.
Rehab,
home for a month. And
okay, so you had a serious brain injury that was even probably, I would think, medically more than a concussion. You had an internal impact.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Dr. Diane.
Well, the difference between a concussion, a moderate brain injury, and a coma is the amount of time you've been unconscious. From 0 to 1 hour is considered either mild traumatic brain injury, it's also now called a concussion. And then from 1 hour to 24 hours is considered moderate, and after 24 hours, it's called a coma.
How long were you out for, Larry?
I was unconscious for 4 hours. And then when they had it, and after the 6 weeks of therapy, I had an episode at home where I had to go back and I lost consciousness again for another, I don't even know how long it was, but I wound up back in the care place.
Okay,
again,
so let's drill down to your question. What question do you have for Dr. Diane?
How did she beat her concussion? She said they're telling me that the only thing now is they're doing blood work for memory, neuropsych testing, speech therapy. And they did the contrast media dye thing, I guess for your brain vessels or whatever, the blood vessels. But I had a violent reaction, and it says here my heart stopped until they flushed the system. But I wake up sometimes. I don't know where I am. Some days I'm perfect, and then some days.
Okay,
you know,
so Larry, I want to try to get you to phrase a question for Dr. Diane. What are you looking for?
She said she wrote a book and she suffered a concussion and she cured herself.
Right.
Because they're telling me it's like hiccups. There is no cure. They tried nortriptyline, and now they're just saying it's just time and therapy. Okay. It'll go away when it goes away.
Larry?
But you said you
Larry,
cured yourself.
The answer is neuroplasticity. The brain can repair itself. And that you have inflammation, we would find out where it's injured. You can
right
do
front.
Through the right front. That's where the emotional area is that it can be helped through neurofeedback, through changing of your diet, through water therapy. These are the different areas of treatment. And yes, with neuroplasticity, is that how I'd describe it is that we have a hub in our brain. And it's a little bit like going from Boston to Atlanta. You go from Boston, Chicago to Atlanta, okay? Well, in my case, Chicago's gone because of my brain surgery. But through neuroplasticity, you can make new connections in your brain to heal.
Okay, so now hold on, Larry, hold on. Now Dr. Diane will explain for you and me, in layman's terms, what neuroplasticity means and how you get it. Please, tell us what that means.
Okay, is that the nerves can reconnect. You can make new...
Got that.
Is that if you have... Think of a...
Wait a second. Does he go to you? Does he go to another doctor? Does he go to a hospital? Does he go to get this happen?
He can come to me, and we do a brain map, and you can find out where it's having the problems. And through neurofeedback, we can make new connections because the brain has been dysregulated. And so to answer the question, what's neuroplasticity, thinking about that you have some land, farmland, and you can take and plow the land and make new connections.
No, I got the airport thing. Yeah, the airport analogy worked for me. But what I'm trying to say is that you, as someone who is a neuropsychologist, Larry's in Quincy. You're in Boxford.
That's right.
I assume that there are other neuropsychologists who can do the same thing.
Yes, and I would refer them to those people.
Okay, great. What you can do, Larry, is you can check drdiane.com, her website, tomorrow. Maybe give her a call, tell her you talked with us tonight, and see if that can work for you, okay?
Okay, yeah, because there's five different doctors have been poking around me last year, and they're just like putting their hands up.
Well,
I was always in perfect health. And
maybe Dr.
Like,
Diane,
she
look.
Sounds like hope.
Yeah, let's see what happens, okay?
All right.
Good luck.
Great show as always, Dan.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, doctor. Thank you very much.
Good night. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030.
Danny.
Hey, look, we haven't had a chance to talk.
Listen to the rival outside.
It went out on the radio.
Is that right?
Dan Ray.
Listen, well, we got a radio.
I hope you have it tuned to Nightside.
Nightside, WBZ, News Radio 1030.
During the break, Dr. Diane was making a point about young kids playing Pop Warner football, which has come into question. And you're an opponent of Pop Warner football with helmets.
That's right.
You go for flag football.
Absolutely. I mean, is you going to
play? So the helmet gives them a sense of false security?
That's right, because when you hit, I was explaining what a head injury is versus a brain injury, is that if you ran full force against the wall, you might get a bump in your head, you might have a bleed, but you might not have a brain injury. You'll have a head injury. And if you're playing just flag football, you hit another kid's head, it hurts. You stopped. But if I have a helmet on and I hit the other kid, you might run faster and hit the other kid. So your head might not hurt, but your brain's injured.
We got full lines. Going to try to get everybody in. If you're on the line, stay there. Let's go next to Larry in Boston. Larry, you're on with Dr. Diane. Go right ahead, Larry.
Hi. I have three questions I'd like to ask.
Go ahead.
Do you want me to ask all
one at a time? Seriatim, as we say in Latin. One at a time. Go ahead.
Okay, number one. This is a complex issue, and I'm sure it's a multifactorial.
Try to make it as simple as you can, Larry, because we're tight on time.
Yes,
go ahead.
I'll do my best. What do you think makes the difference between those people that are resilient and get better and those people that are not as resilient and don't have as good results as far as recovery goes?
Real quickly, I'm going to guess she's going to say better treatment. Go ahead, doctor.
That's a better treatment and also basically attachments. You know, is that if someone, when you were a kid, when it was there for you to hug you and give you... And that's one of the things, and you're all not going to believe what I'm going to tell you. I label all my patients by dogs, and so the Chihuahua is definitely then different than the Husky.
Do you think a healthy attitude and mental toughness has any...
Absolutely.
And also, you mentioned diet before?
Absolutely.
Did you find that vitamins and changes in diet were helpful?
Omega-3s are absolute, because they're an anti-inflammatory. When your brain is injured, your brain is inflamed, no different than if you hit your elbow and you can see it turning red. You don't want to be eating beef at that time. You want to do your sardines. You want to do sockeye salmon. You don't want to be eating rice, because rice is a form of alcohol. That's sake. So your brain is getting an alcohol in there. You don't want to be eating white potatoes, because that's like vodka. You want to be eating sweet potatoes. You can have legumes. You want to have nuts. And olive oil.
And all of this information is available at your website.
Absolutely.
Right?
Okay, and also the fact that you were right and the healthcare providers that treated you all told you that you were not going to get better, and you did get better, does that have an effect on your perceptions of the people who treated you, and what kind of effect did it have?
I wrote my book, and I presented it to them after, and I smiled and say, you were wrong.
All right, Larry, check out the website, drdiane.com, okay?
Thank you so much.
Have a great night. Let me go to Danica in Lexington. Danica, how are you?
Hi. I had a concussion a couple months ago, and I didn't remember that day after I woke up. I had a snowboarding accident, and I still can't remember it now. I was wondering if I ever would.
The answer, to my amazement, if you had talked to me a few years ago, I would have said no. I have now seen with one of my patients that something can cue you, and yes, you can have memories. Yes.
What do you need to do?
So is there anything I can do that can ensure that I can remember what happened?
Well, I go back to having the good diet and doing some of the neurofeedback and also some water therapy. Some of the things can help to help you retrieve those things. Yes.
Okay. Hope that helps.
I was also wondering, during my concussion, or like when I was concussed, that particular day right after my accident, I didn't remember anything, but I could still recognize my parents and my sister. I was wondering how that was possible.
Is because there's different portions of your memory keep those memories for you. So you have short-term memories, you have immediate memories, so those people, and also the different sides of your brain, is the right side of the brain is more the visual, and you can picture someone versus maybe, you know, someone, you forget somebody's name, but say, I remember, and we've met before.
Danica, check out her website, drdiane.com, okay, and you obviously can contact her as well.
Thank you
so much. Best of luck, all right?
Thank you, bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Dr. Diane also said that she feels that many of the folks who were near the bomb blast at the marathon back in April of 2013 may have also suffered concussions from the bomb blast and not even realized it. So for those of you out there listening, you may want to check out her website as well, drdiane.com. Let's keep it rolling. Suzanne in Wenham. Suzanne, next on Night Cycle, right ahead.
Hi there, Dr. Diane. I fell and slipped on ice a few years ago and got a concussion, and my primary care physician calls it a mild concussion, which reading your book, I understand there's no such thing as a mild concussion. And I appreciate all of the information in your book. My 15-year-old son recently got a concussion, and I followed most of the great advice in your book, and he is getting much better, but he is still having sleep disturbances. And I'm just wondering, I saw a product on your website, the CES device. Would that help with his sleep disturbances after concussion?
Absolutely. What the CES is, cranial electrostimulation, is that portion of your brain, which is your midbrain, which controls your speech, your sleep and anxiety and depression, what that does is actually helps quiet that part so you can have restorative sleep. Yes.
That's great, and a good about anxiety, too, because most 15-year-olds I know are feeling quite anxious these days.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Suzanne. Hope that helps. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030. We're going to try to get everybody in here, so stay with us. David in Pennsylvania. David, how are you?
How about yourself there?
Great. Go right ahead. You're on with Dr. Diane. David, what's your question?
Well, I had a bunch of injuries back in October 2013. And I had two brain hemorrhages. I had three pieces of my neck chipped, five left back fracture ribs, pulmonary contusion, I had a tibia sticking out a little bit.
What'd you do? Get hit by a train, David, or what?
Well, I just appreciate you hearing me, and I just want Diane to hear this. I had I don't remember nothing after leaving the parking lot of the Food Line in Mount Jackson, Virginia. And it was 12 hours later. They happened about 9:30 at night. And about 12 hours later, the next morning, I woke up at a table, and it was like three doctors focusing on my neurological. And I wasn't worried about what they were, you know, who they were. And I had something sticking out the side of my head, and I thought I had an aviator hat on.
Now, David, hold on for a second. What had you experienced that caused this? I'm not being a wise guy, but I'm short of time here, and there are other callers as well. What caused this accident or this trauma?
Well, I've been told the circumstances. Being you a lawyer, it's sickening to know that I can't figure out really what happened. They tell me I was run over. And
so someone must have picked you up. Was it like an EMT crew that picked you up off the street? Is that the deal?
Well, all I know is I was helicoptered after all.
Okay, fair enough. David, you're not giving me the answers I need, so I'm going to have to move on. But I would suggest you check out Dr. Diane's website, okay?
Can I ask you one other question?
You haven't asked one question yet, David. So other callers I got to get to, and I asked you, I got to get to other people, okay? I appreciate your call. Helen in Wakefield. Go ahead, Helen. How are you?
Hey, how are you? I'm Helen. I'm from north of Boston.
Yep, we established that. Go right ahead.
Okay. My son is a senior in high school, and in 2 months, he has received two concussions. Hmm. One was from a wrestling incident where they were practicing, and he cracked his head on somebody's hip. Oof. And the second one was about not even 2 months later when he got hit in the head by a volleyball in the school gym.
Okay, so what's your question, Helen, because we are fast running out of time.
My question is that he's had neurological exams, and they all say that he's fine and that it'll blow over. What should I be looking for other than he's still having symptoms of being tired?
That's right. Go on to my website of drdiane.com. That's drdiane.com. And you'll see about second impact syndrome. What we're talking about is that when you've had one concussion and then another like that, that the fatigue, and this is in my book, Coping with Concussion, Mild Traumatic Brain Injury. The fatigue is the number one, and then you have confusion and a lot of these symptoms. And during this time, I can't emphasize enough, make sure, cut out all sugars, and he can have certain foods that's on my website. But
check out the website, yeah. Helen. We're flat out
absolutely.
Of time.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your time. Have a good night. You've been helpful.
Thank you so much. Good luck.
Thank you very much. Here's what we're going to do. I can't. There are too many callers. So what we'll have to do is just direct you to Dr. Diane's website, drdiane.com. Dr. Diane, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I will look by fast.